I want to share with you this very unique instrument. We call the dead whistle. The dead whistle the Aztec used for special ceremonies, for Day of the Dead celebration. And also they use when they have a war, when they fight with other tribes. They play over 100 instruments, 100 dead whistles, marching and make a lot of noise to cause a big psychological effects to the enemy. So this is very intimidating instruments, and this is very unique. So this is the dead whistle.
Hi everyone. This is Into the Dark on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you like what we do on this station, you should contribute at radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. We got a great show for you today. Stay tuned for more Into the Dark.
Skeptic among believers and the believer among skeptics.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Who are the witches?
Magic, necromancy, and witchcraft.
Wake up! They're all about you! All around you!
They're not heroes.
In the often heroic world of the witch.
The journalist with an inside knowledge of witchcraft.
It's a sex thing to be done, of course.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Into the Dark on Radio Free Brooklyn, our first new episode of the new season. We got a huge, big, witchy show for you. I'm super excited, and we're going to get jumping right now with an interview I did with someone leading a massive spell to bind our president for now, Donald Trump. And after that, I'll be calling in and having, hopefully, a conversation with a man named Douglas Lucas, who is has just started an occult record label that's just put out two albums at the very least. I'm going to try to do a call-in conversation with him, which will be fascinating because I don't really know how to use the phone. I've looked it up. I've been trained. But am I prepared? Am I ready? We'll find out. And worst comes worse, I'll just plug in my phone. Anyway, so keep listening and welcome to Radio Free Brooklyn's first witchcraft show. And now there's another one I'm super excited about. I hear Ammo Daily has one on their network, which I caught part of, like, I think the first episode, and it's good. You should listen to that one too. Keep listening to Witchy Radio. But in the meantime, here's that conversation about using magic for political purposes to stop Donald J. Trump.
Okay, cool. It should be going now. So thank you for taking the time to speak to me about this. This is like an opener. Could you give me like a quick rundown of just like what the binding spell is, what it will hopefully do, and all that?
Sure. Yeah. This spell was developed. It was kind of circulating among a group of occultists and magicians of various various flavors. And the idea, was to do something to sort of bind or restrain Trump in his administration because of what many of us saw as, just the horrible things he was doing in terms of civil liberties and the environment and, just what we saw as a general sort of assault on the things that we care very much about. And So this was just kind of a working document that was circulating, and several people kind of contributed to it. And then because I am very open about occultism and practicing it, writing about it, and I'm a very sort of public facing person, they thought I would be the ideal person to publish it and put it out there. And really, none of us expected the intense virality of the spell and what happened. It really took us all by surprise. And within days of it being published, it had tens of thousands of views, and people were circulating it on social media. People were talking about doing it. And before long, it just really became a global sort of viral thing that lots of people were doing, and it was really kind of astounding. It very much seemed like a right thing, right time. I think a lot of people were looking for something to do. So many of us felt beaten down by the administration and what it was doing that, even people that aren't, normally inclined to do such things really just said, what the hell, let's do it. Let's see what happens.
That's really fantastic. So I take it then, since this sort of emerged relatively organically among a number of people, have you done anything like this before, like a merger of magic and politics?
I personally haven't. I mean, the magic that I practice is sort of an eclectic, it's more theurgical. It's more towards, just kind of development of the self and expansion of consciousness and things along those lines. Although I have practiced, practical sort of magic too. But there's a history of this sort of thing. There was something called the Magical Battle of Britain, in which a bunch of occultists led by Dion Fortune during the Second World War developed a magical sort of program for people aligned with her lodge, her organization, to keep the Nazis away from Great Britain. And there was also something called the Cone of Power, in which a bunch of witches basically did the same thing. So there is sort of a precedent of magical, of what we've been calling magical or magic resistance, political resistance in a magic sense. And those were clearly in our mind when we were developing this particular ritual.
So this has clearly been a really big success in terms mm-hmm. of at least the amount of attention it's gotten and the number of people who wanted to participate and wanted to have mm-hmm. an avenue like this. Mm-hmm. Do you think you're going to keep doing things of this nature in the future? You're going to keep, or is this sort of like a one-time? So I mean, like, I think a lot of people see Trump as an ongoing crisis.
Yeah.
So do you see yourself doing a lot of something like this, or do you perhaps branch down to other things that would sort of combine magic and politics, or where does the future of this?
Yeah, the future, I think it's definitely not a one-off. I think this really hit a desire for people to be, basically we're seeing, a huge political, social awakening of a lot of people due to what's happening in our country right now. And actually, when we look at what's happening all over the world with the rise of right-wing nationalist, populist sort of leaders. So I think this kind of, this was a right thing, right time. This is really a right thing, right time ritual and an idea that sort of germinated, and I think that's why I caught on so well, because a lot of people feel their personal power has just been sort of sucked away, and all of us are out there marching, writing our government representatives, going to town hall meetings and that sort of thing. We're all doing everything in that sphere of our lives to try to resist and to try to bring change that we feel is necessary. So the idea that we're doing it in other ways, a sort of spiritual resistance, using that element of ourselves, seemed just completely appropriate, and I think that's why I caught on. That's why it went so viral. So I don't see this as really a one-time shot, we're already seeing that in the groups and social media where people discuss these things. They're already developing, other sorts of rituals, other sorts of techniques to address what's happening politically and socially. So it's really growing. It's really expanding. And I think you know, what falls under the term magic resistance is just going to get bigger. I don't see any sign of it slowing down right now. And as it gets bigger, I think it's going to get more inclusive and broader in its goals.
If people wanted to get involved and they wanted to sort of follow this as it goes, what would you suggest for them?
Well, first of all, people that are on social media, on Facebook, there's an official group. It's moderated, so, you know, it's a safe space to discuss these things and to interact with others, to also to find people in your area if you want to do things like this as a group instead of, you know, individually. And it's basically called Bind Trump Official. That's sort of the official group that came together. But there are also lots of other groups happening on Facebook. There's a lot of activity on Twitter. I think that's really the best place right now to find like-minded people and talk about this stuff. I've heard of people, you know, local groups, local occult groups, local witch groups, who are, you know, sort of networking and reaching out. So it's kind of infiltrated through, the magical community, the pagan community. And, everybody's aware of it. And there's, interestingly to me, there's been a lot of pushback from the pagan community. I mean, I expected it from the evangelical community, but,
right.
there's been a lot of dissension in magical groups and witch groups and things like that, which was interesting.
What was the nature of that dissent? Was it that you were getting involved in politics at all, or was it having opposing political views?
Yeah, it was interesting to me. I'm not a witch, but this thing became, you know, because the media hears the word spell and they think witches. But I'm not a witch, but that's cool. You know, a lot of witches embrace this, and it became in the media, you know, witches versus Trump kind of thing, which is, you know, a little on the simplistic side. But a lot of witches believe that if you put out something negative, that it rebounds on you threefold. You know, there's a variation of things called the threefold law and the Wiccan read. My response was, first of all, I'm not a Wiccan. The threefold law is not some ancient, truism. It's something that was developed in the middle of the 20th century. Not even all witches abide by that. But there's a lot of belief that, you know, you're doing something negative. When we see it not as negative, we see it as sort of a form of magical self-defense. Not hexing or cursing, but trying to slow the roll of this administration to keep them from doing further harm. But some people believe you shouldn't do rituals publicly. You know, that magic is only done in private and secret. But this, from the very beginning, was designed as a public act of resistance. And that was what it was intended to do. That's what it is. And I think its power is in the fact that it is such a public thing, that it is a large-scale movement rather than, you know, people doing something secretively on their own.
Great. I think we're coming up on the end of the interview. Thank you so much for talking to me. But before we cut things off, if you could use this as a platform to say anything to the magic community, people who are interested in this sort of thing, is there any sort of message you'd like to give them to sort of?
Sure. I'd like to say that, to people out there who practice magic as part of spirituality, that it is critical that we are engaged in society, that we are engaged in the political realm. I think it's critical. I think it's especially critical in times when things that many in the pagan and magical communities care about, like civil liberties and the environment, are under such, such a, serious attack from this administration, that we need all hands on deck, and that means all sorts of spiritual avenues as well as just the mundane, the signing petitions and marching and things like that. We've got to bring the entirety of ourselves and our consciousness, and that includes our spirituality to fight back and to resist.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. And I'm really excited for people to hear this and to try to get involved if they want to.
Okay, excellent. If you could shoot me a link when you have it up, I'd love to share it with the community.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Cool. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks, Cooper. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So many thanks to Michael M. Hughes. If you want to learn more about what he's doing or check out his newsletter, go to michaelmhughes.com. And now I have someone else on the line, provided that I did this correctly. Douglas, are you there? He might not be. How strange. Oh, wait. Douglas, are you there?
I am.
Huzzah! I finally made something work. So, a little bit of introduction. Douglas Lucas is the founder of the record label Arcana Machine, and they are putting out two albums. Douglas, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm actually just really excited because I've never used this phone before, and so I was worried that this would be a terrible catastrophe, but it's actually turned out to be more or less fine, though fingers crossed, don't want to jinx it, before we get started. So let's talk about before anything else. Like, so you founded Arcana Machines. Am I saying Arcana? Is it Arcana or is it Arcana?
Yeah, Arcana.
So you founded this fairly recently, right?
Yeah, the idea came about last fall, and the first release came out in April of this year.
Okay, and it is an occult record label in its conception.
It's a label based on exploring esoteric influences and practices, which is a broad range of ideas. So far, all of the artists that I've worked with and that I'm in the works with are coming from some kind of specific occult background. Yeah.
Okay. So one of the first big albums you're putting out is Kenneth Anger and Brian Butler's Technicolor Skull. Can you talk a bit about how you started working with them and how that sort of came about?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'd been in touch with Brian Butler about the project, and I guess I discovered them a few years ago. I'd been a fan of Kenneth Anger's films for years, and I figured out about his music project with Brian, and I really loved it, and struck up a relationship with Brian, and I told him about the label and asked if they would be interested in putting something out, and he said yes, and so it ended up being the first release on the label.
And I'm led to understand that this album is coming out in a limited edition of 666 cassettes.
It is. And it's actually already out.
Okay, that's fantastic. And actually, we could play some of that. But before we get to maybe hearing a bit of it, I'd like to talk more about like the background of there. So I know this is based loosely on a ritual that they have been touring since, I think, 2008. It is not a recreation of that ritual, right? It is, because the ritual is a largely visual experience in a lot of ways, is my understanding.
Well, they started in 2008. I think they had their first show that year, and then they put out an LP in 2011, I think. And so, yeah, the album that's out on Arcana Machine is called Mark Six, and it's a totally new recording, a totally new.
Right. And on the website, it says that it describes it as 40 minutes of
heavy sonic ritual and initiation. When it's conceived of as initiation, do you know like what exactly they're being, like the listener is sort of being initiated into, or is it?
Well, both Kenneth Anger and Brian Butler come from a background largely to do with Aleister Crowley, and they're both really, in their own way, they're both scholars on Crowley. They're both kind of coming from a very Crowleyan aesthetic, magically. They're both interested in Crowley, you know, both as a magician and also as an artist as well. So the recording is a little bit different than the live experience. When they play live, it's Kenneth Anger on theremin and Brian Butler on guitar and electronics, synthesizers and such. And then in the background, they have projections of a montage of Kenneth Anger's films. So it's kind of a, you know, it's very visual, very, very sonic. It's kind of a very visceral experience and kind of affects you in, you know, all kinds of different ways. Much like a ritual can, you know, if it's done in that way and done properly, I think.
And so how would you describe, so is he playing theremin on this album, or is it?
Yeah.
Okay. And actually we can play a little bit of it right now, just to give people a taste of
cool,
what it's
yeah.
like. And the other sort of big album that's coming out is Vanessa St. Clair and Carl Abrahamson's album, which is 9 readings of cut up texts. And that's called, I keep forgetting the title of that one. I'm sorry. It's Cut to Fit the Mouth?
Yeah, Cut to Fit the Mouth.
Okay, cool. And so I'm understanding, so Vanessa St. Clair is a psychoanalyst by training, and Carl Abrahamson is an occultist. And how they started working together, or how this sort of this project came about? Because it's mostly cut up sort of like William S. Burroughs style stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Vanessa is an artist, and she works a lot with the cut up method, you know, cutting up texts and making poetry and also visual pieces. And I don't know exactly when her and Carl met, but I met them both at the Occult Humanities Conference, which happened here in New York at NYU last February. I developed a friendship with both of them after meeting them. And at some point, during that time, they started working together. They also put on a conference on psychoanalysis and the occult. So they started collaborating and working together, and eventually that resulted in doing recordings. Carl's been doing music for years. He's had a couple of bands, one called White Stains, and his current band is called Cotton Ferox. So they started working together essentially with recording Vanessa's cut-up texts and poetry, her doing readings, and Carl doing some readings as well. And then Carl took those and put music and sound with it. And they turned out really great, and I was interested in working with both of them with the label. And I contacted them both separately and then found out that they were actually working together, unbeknownst to me, doing these recordings. So it made sense to kind of put one release out with both of them on it. And that's kind of how this one came to be. And it's their debut as well. They've done some recordings before, but this is their debut album.
Okay, so that's really exciting.
Together, that is.
And we're going to play, I think, some of that at the end of the show to give people a taste of that as well. And so if people want
great.
To get these albums, listen to these albums, engage with these albums, they should go to arcanamachine.com right? And we can link to that at the okay, cool. And are are Vanessa and Carl doing anything performance wise soon?
We might be doing a show here in June, actually. I'm not 100% sure yet, but we've been talking about possibly doing something here in New York sometime next month, or maybe July. But I don't really have any details about that just yet. But if it does end up happening, we'll definitely be promoting it via the website and then, of course, the Facebook page as well.
That's great.
So stay tuned for
that. That does happen also. Please do send me a text and I will talk about it on this show because it's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this, I think, relates to something. So you've written about Sonic Ritual before and Sonic Sigils in particular, I believe.
Sigil Practice was the first sort of magical practice that I experimented with on my own, and you know, I think just like everyone that's done work with sigils, I had a lot of success with them, and I wanted to incorporate that practice into sound because I'm, you know, I've played music for years, and sound and music have always been a big part of my life in one way or another. And so I wanted it to be a bigger part of my, you know, magical practice as well. So I started getting the idea of taking the kind of classic sigil technique, you know.
For listeners who are unfamiliar with this particular practice, could you give them like a, because we've talked about sigils before on the show, but just like very quickly, could you give them like a rundown, like what is a sigil, how is a sigil used, that sort
yeah,
of
sure.
Thing.
Well, sigils came from at least the modern day sigil practice, which I'm referring to, kind of originated with the artist Austin Austin Spare, and kind of carried over and inspired a lot of chaos magicians. But essentially the technique is, you know, taking a desire and writing it down on a piece of paper, and then basically deleting letters by means of, if there's any letters that are repeated, you know, you write the desire down as one sentence and then cut out any letters that are repeated and any vowels as well. And then you're left with this string of consonants, which you turn into a glyph, essentially. You know, you turn into a drawing, which becomes a symbol, or if you will, a manifestation of the desire, but in a way that's not consciously recognizable. And then that is in turn taken and charged via a ritual. And which there's many ways of doing that, and then the idea is that you know, your wish comes true, you get what you desire. I think that pretty much breaks it down.
And so you started working with making sonic sigils. So like instead of making a glyph, you did
So my idea was to take the same idea, but you know, write the desire. And get down to that string of consonants. And I'd also read in the book Liber Null, they talk about, Peter J. Carroll talks about, you know, taking those remaining consonants, rearranging them into a mantra, which you can say aloud instead of a glyph. And so my idea was to take that, and but instead of kind of that being the end of the process, taking this string of letters and pronouncing them, rearranging them into something that's pronounceable, and then recording that, and then taking that recording and treating it in the same way that you would when you're drawing a sigil, you know, manipulating it, changing it into a frequency, into a sound that's unrecognizable. Even apart from the letters themselves and the recording and the way it was pronounced. and then that being the sigil that you use to charge, and in the same, you know, same way that you would a drawn sigil.
So in terms of using sonic sigils, is this like a purely sort of vocal exercise, or would it work to sort of maybe like record this or incorporate electronic devices or other instruments into this and make non-human elements part of this?
I think it's really up to the individual as far as that goes. I wrote an outline about this process, and I really tried to keep it bare bones and really short and to the point, with the hope that people will take it and run with it and do what they will with it, you know. I can definitely foresee it. You know, I had one of the things I suggest in the outline is, instead of actually vocalizing it, maybe record the sound of a pencil or a pen tracing the letters, or if you do have a glyph that's a sigil, you know, trace the sigil and record that sound, and then to in turn manipulate that sound, or just use the sound of the tracing, you know, as a way of having a sonic sigil. So I think the possibilities are endless, really.
That is okay. So that is super cool. And if people want to get their hands on this outline that you're talking about, where can they go? What can they do?
The only place that it's available for sale currently is Catland in Bushwick and Brooklyn. And I have a few copies left on my own, but I would recommend people go to Catland and pick it up if they can. If they're not in New York, they can get in touch with me via email at douglasglucas@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to get one out to them.
Great, and we'll put that email up when this becomes a podcast, so that people can read that out at their leisure. So
great.
You've been doing a fair amount of ritual magic as well, and incorporating that into your practice, I'm led to understand.
Yeah. And
are these rituals? Do they usually feature a sonic component to them?
It varies. You know, it depends on exactly what I'm doing. But I've, of course, definitely used sonic sigils, and I find that they work just as well as kind of classic sigils, at least for me. I definitely, you know, sound is important to me, and I do like to utilize it when I can in ritual or wherever.
Great. And we've talked before about the use of ritual and the use of things like that. And you mentioned before getting into like a Gnostic state when you're trying to do certain kinds of rituals. And could you talk a little bit about doing that and the process for doing that? And like what that feels like, what that sensation is like. Could you describe being in a Gnostic state for someone who perhaps has never been in it or doesn't think they've ever been in it?
Well, for me, it's really beyond words. It's, you know, it's a state of passing through normal consciousness and normal awareness into a state of abnormal consciousness and abnormal awareness. And, you know, it's a state of mind where abnormal things can happen. And I think that's the goal of Gnosis, is to cross that barrier and get into a state where changes can happen. I think a lot of people have experienced Gnosis, or at least the feeling of being in that state, even if they don't realize it. You know, if you've ever been extremely afraid, you know, that can definitely feel a lot like, and can even indeed be a state of Gnosis. It can be a technique that you can utilize, or, you know, extreme anger, and of course, you know, the classic, erotic feeling, you know, of, sexual encounters, and can, you know, it's also a Gnosis state.
as well. So I think everybody has experienced something like that. I hope so. Anyway,
I mean, certainly past a certain age. It's worth pointing out just because, you know, we are a how-to kind of show and we're here as a resource community. So like in terms of like erotic encounters being used to achieve a state of doses, you can do that on your own if you want. Masturbation does work.
Sure.
But also, I mean, to the point of using fear for that purposes, I mean, there is a classic story of comic book writer Grant Morrison creating a sigil because he wanted to make a comic that would eventually become The Invisibles, and he painted the sigil on his chest and held it in his mind as he went bungee jumping and used the fear for...
Yeah, I've heard that story, yeah.
So, like, this I think would be very beneficial to people who are interested in these sorts of things but they don't really know how to get started. And I feel like sigils are a good sort of first step. But, like, what advice would you give to somebody who's interested in ritual, they're interested in magic, they want to do stuff like this, but they don't know where to begin?
Well, I definitely think Liber Null is a great place to start. It's definitely the first proper book that I read on chaos magic and chaos magic practice. And, you know, I think what's great about it is that's really what it's about. It's about technique, and it's about developing technique. It's really about practice, and I think and it's about practical practice, you know. It's so I think that's a great place to start. There's Phil Hine has some great books that are coming from a similar area, you know. It's about practice, and he actually has a really great website with some nice essays on it as well. If you just Google Phil Hine, I'm sure it'll come up.
How do you spell Hine? Is that with a Y or...
I'm sorry.
How do you spell Hine? Is that with a Y or how would you?
It's with an I. It's H I N E.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Great. So how did you first become interested in these topics? Like what drew you to it? Because I mean, you mentioned Null, and I think you did a lot of reading early on about Aleister Crowley, right? Am I misremembering?
Yeah. Crowley was a figure who popped up a lot in my life. I mean, I remember seeing a video on why rock and roll was of the devil when I was really young, and there was a section in there on Crowley, and you know, I was fascinated by him then, even though I didn't know anything about him. And he just kept popping up in different people that I was interested in, were, you know, would mention him in an interview or... he's been around, you know, he got around quite a bit in his life, and he still does. I started reading Crowley and really kind of diving into his books, his writing after I'd read Liber Null and kind of had developed a chaos magic kind of influenced practice on my own. But I think Crowley is, you know, he's definitely important, and he's definitely influential, even to chaos magic. You know, he kind of grew out of people who were in the OTO and were, you know, really into Crowley, kind of. So really, chaos magic is kind of an outgrowth of his work. But I think for people who are looking for kind of off the bat structure and, you know, something they can walk into and have a really firm, solid foundation and structure, I think Crowley's a great place to start. And I think for people who are more inclined to kind of take ideas and work with them in their own way and produce their own kind of approach, I think that you know, chaos magic is better suited for that, because it's left more to you to kind of build your own practice instead of kind of laying out a system for you.
Right. I mean, part of what attracted me to chaos magic was like the way in which you just sort of, you decide your level of involvement, you decide what you're interested in, what the things can mean. It feels sort of like the DIY punk scene in that regard.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
But, cool. Okay, so we're coming up on the end of our time. So,
Okay. Given
that you now have a platform to speak to the occult listeners who are listening now live and who will listen to the podcast later, where it is played in various countries, surprisingly a lot in Russia for some reason. Also, hi Russia.
Yeah.
Hey, not to disparage. Yay, just, you know, surprised. It's cool. Well done. Is there anything you'd like to tell or say to all these people?
Yeah, I think, you know, the main thing I think for anybody who is coming into magic and knows nothing and, you know, is just getting their hands dirty, or for people who've been doing it for a long time, I think one of the things that I see a lot is, you know, the idea of magic is, you know, a definition is, you know, change in situations, changes in events, in accordance with one's will. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of people out there who are practicing magic. But I think there's a fine line between practicing magic and living magic. And I think the practice should ultimately end in some kind of manifestation in the life of the person. You know, when whatever that means, I mean, that could mean a lot of different things. But I think sometimes it seems like it's easy for people to get wrapped up in doing certain practices and in working with things. But, you know, and that's kind of the be-all, end-all of it. But I think it should, you know, the idea is to translate these things into living magic. And I think that's the goal. That's definitely my goal, is to, you know, make changes in the world in accordance with my will, via these practices. Otherwise, you know, it's more of a, seems more like a hobby.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about all this. And, Arcana Machine is the label, and look out for, Kenneth Anger and Bryant Butler's Technicolor Skull and Vanessa Sinclair and Carl Abrahamson's Cut to Fit the Mouth. And thank you so much for talking to me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Have a swell day.
You as well.
Cool. So that was Doug Lucas. Thank you so much, Doug. Please be sure to check out his record label. And thank you for listening to the Darkroom Radio for Brooklyn. This is our first episode of the new season. We're going to be doing two a month until the end of the season, and then the future is unknown, as Unknown Hinson is wont to say. And if you want to send us a question for our research department, send that to intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. And I have been instructed to inform you also that Brooklyn Pride Week is coming June 5th through the 10th. And it's going, the theme this year is Equality, No Exceptions. And there's going to be a 5K in Prospect Park. There's going to be a festival and parade on Fifth Avenue and Park Slope. And there will be features include a documentary, the first openly trans FDNY firefighter, queer comedy, and a full day of events on Saturday, June 10th. So do be sure to check that out and keep listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This has been To the Dark, and we're going to close out now with part of one of the tracks off Vanessa Sinclair and Carl Abrahamson's album. Have a great witchy fortnight, guys.
We are born into a story, an already existing narrative. Even before we are born, our "we're changing" makes us feel as though this is close to us, the way our spiritual be is being regarded, so specifically that the person that we are working on developing now is not getting accepted so readily. Outside world to be perceived as siblings. For a very long time now, we've been talking about a couple of characters that we'd like to grow into when we're older. It was that on my own I bring, I think, probably my ability to sort through, then have one of us, you know, whichever one has the stronger personality, devour the other. And that one person would sort of be a mimic of the other. But to be it, we think it through. That is supposed to be the idea of two people working towards the same goal. I couldn't do it alone. And it would be helpful. Expression is a good thing. or individuality. This is how I'm choosing to exercise my individuality, to join forces with another. Screaming a while ago, I might have come to that point again where I have to give more than I have. It was a real natural sort of instinct for me to resist giving, to step back from our experiences and take a look at our arguments, or the, when we begin to break down this system, push boundaries, surpass borderlines, and transgress limits. Representation of my spirit, and one that was more beautiful and more aesthetically pleasing, was more accurate. I mean, I could follow the judge appearance, family, and society, have ideas of who we will be, what we will do, how we will succeed, and what trials we may face, all before we have even left our mother's body. Released has a heavy performative aspect. It should be essentially malleable, not only varying from person to person, but evolving over a person's lifespan, from situation to situation, or, oh, absolutely, it has been very relaxing to feel as though my external appearance reflects my internal thoughts and desires. It's usually rewarding. I, even more, to have the support from the people on the outside. There's a lot of friends who may be conceptually inclined, and they think that giving up your ego person of. Fortunately, I think that this other person is the finest person I've ever known, and one of the most morally refined, so that it makes it vary who we are, and then treating us in a certain way. And it's helpful in that way because we are both receiving some of the same sensory information from deeply in love with my partner. But I have to say that I've stopped looking in the mirror so much. I don't know how relevant this is. I don't bother with it. But when those that seal versus those that remain open, or rather, unable to close, we may even consider the pores of the skin to be countless numbers of orifices, tiny mouths.